Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program. This Monday, the 19th of June, 2017, I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe from the Social Media Desk with all your comments on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and on the different social media platforms.
In today's program, Malian authorities confirm arrest of jihadist terrorists and the death of six people.
The government in Bamako is at this moment, as we speak, losing the center of the country, specifically in the Mopti area, which is about 600 kilometers from the capital.
And DW's annual Global Media Forum opens in Bonn as the director, Peter Limburg, urges journalists to remain focused during this turbulent moment.
Media also has to promote the exchange of ideas and build bridges, even between seemingly unbridgeable positions.
And in case you want to know what's taking place at the Global Media Forum, all you can do is just go to our Facebook page in the search engine, type in Global Media Forum 2017, and you'll be part of the forum itself.
Stay tuned for all that and a lot more to come on the program. But first, let's listen to what's been happening around the world.
I'm Christina Kripal with the DW News. At least 16 people died in Nigeria in a double suicide bombing near a large camp for people made homeless by years of Boko Haram violence, authorities said Monday. The biggest in a series of weekend attacks took place Sunday evening close to the Dalori camp in Kofa village near the Borno state capital, Maiduguri. In Mali, four people died on Sunday evening when gunmen opened fire at the luxury resort Le Campement Kangaba in the outskirts of the capital, Bamako. One guest is still missing. Five assailants were also shot, according to the authorities. No one has claimed responsibility for the attacks yet, but authorities believe it fits the pattern of Islamic terrorist attacks targeting Westerns in the Sahel region. The United Nations called on South Sudan's leaders to take more responsibility for stemming the world's fastest-growing refugee crisis. In South Sudan, the head of the UNHCR refugee agency, Filippo Grandi, said today world powers had to step up pressure on the country's warring parties to go back to talks on ending civil war. Grandi summed up the situation.
We are here in a location of internally displaced people. There's almost 2 million of them. In South Sudan, they are part of the more than 40 million internally displaced people worldwide, who are in turn part of the almost 66 million people forcibly displaced in the world.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel said today that trade with Africa needs to be fairer. Merkel pointed out that while there were good trade agreements with poorer African countries, deals with states in the middle segment were not sufficiently balanced. Merkel plans to take up the issue at the EU-Africa summit in autumn. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Following the downing of a Syrian jet by the armed forces of the United States of America, Russia has threatened with attacks in the Syrian airspace. Moscow said on Monday that it would track U.S.-led coalition aircraft in central Syria as targets. It also suspended an incident prevention hotline with Washington. Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov called for better coordination in Syria.
We call on everybody to avoid the unilateral actions, to respect, I stress once again, Syria's sovereignty, and to join our work, which is coordinated with the Syrian government.
Analysts say that while there is no intention of escalating the conflict on neither side, the situation remains volatile because of the many forces intervening in the Syrian conflict. A 48-year-old man plowed a van into a crowd of Muslim worshippers outside North London Mosque early Monday in an attack that police were investigating as a terrorist incident. 10 people were injured in the attack and police said another man died at the scene. The attacker was arrested. In Paris, a man today drove his car into a police van. The car caught fire on impact and the man who was armed was seriously injured, according to authorities. No one else was hurt in the incident, being investigated as an act of terrorism. For more news and information, download the DW app from the Google Play Store or from iTunes. I'm Christina Kripal.
Here in Bonn, the weather is sunny, and you're listening to DW's Africa Link, broadcasting from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe from the Social Media Desk.
We start the program in Mali, where government said five suspected jihadists had launched an attack at a popular luxury resort at Kanaba near Bamako on Sunday were in custody. Six people were killed, including the attackers. Mali's security minister, Salif Touaré, confirmed the release of 36 hostages. Despite the presence of foreign forces, Mali has continued to experience jihadist attack and the country remains insecure. What exactly is the problem? I put this question to DW's West African correspondent, Bram Posthumus. Take a listen.
Well, the problem really is that the foreign interventions haven't been doing what they are supposed to be doing. MINUSMA, the UN mission, has been there for well over 4 years, and they are supposed to help the Malian state re-establish its authority in its entire territory, and that simply hasn't happened. And the French have been there basically to make sure that the French residents in the capital Bamako, of whom there may be as many as 10,000, are safe. And that objective has been by and large attained. And obviously, the fact of the matter on the ground is that it's getting worse. And none of the foreign interventions or even the Malian interventions seem to be able to put a stop to it.
In Mali's troubled north, jihadists often target domestic and foreign, but attacks on civilians in and around the capital are much rarer. What explains the attack on civilians this time round?
Well, I think the main reason is that the attack was on white civilians. Let's not mince words here. Malian friends who I've been talking to after the attack told me, listen, they were targeting whites. And this is the same thing that happened in La Terrasse, the bar that was attacked in 2015.
Bram, you just talked about the attack on the Radisson Blue Hotel that suddenly left 20 people dead. Now, since then, government instituted a state of emergency, which has been in place more or less ever since. Has this been of any help?
Very little, because as I can tell you from personal experience, the state of emergency has certainly not led to a beefing up of security in and around the capital or in the rest of the country. The government in Bamako is at this moment, as we speak, losing the center of the country, specifically in the Mopti area, which is about 600 kilometers from the capital. Entering Bamako is, excuse the pun, is a piece of cake. And I can tell you also from personal contacts that increasingly the feeling is that Bamako is some kind of a fairly isolated, fairly tranquil island in a sea of turbulence. And even that island, as we now know, is not entirely safe.
Is there any way or is there any strategy, any plan that has been put in place as to how government can ever deal with the problem of jihadists?
Well, we've got the peace accord. We've got the Algiers peace accord. It's 2 years old this month. That hasn't been living up to expectations, only because there have been various groups sort of flitting in and out of that accord, changing names, changing affiliations, changing caps even. At one moment they're jihadists, another moment they're rebels, another moment they're criminals, another moment they're independence fighters, freedom fighters. And the other thing, obviously, is that there doesn't seem to be a strategy in place from either the government or its international partners to bring any process forward. And that.
DW's West African correspondent, Bram Posthumus.
Well, Jen, this particular story has made many people talking. We posted it on our Facebook page. And Ronda Dakufo said the government should do more to protect its people. Ajabang from Accra, Ghana says this is total failure on the part of the government. It is a shame that these kind of actions can happen in capital cities. The Malian government should improve on its security.
Yes, indeed. There were quite lots of responses coming in from this about this story. And I did have a look at our page and I saw a one Franklin Okechuku Bernard saying, since attacks on tourist resorts by armed elements are becoming rampant, the government should therefore provide 24-hour security to all the tourist hubs in the country.
Gabriel Edwin says, indeed, such acts should be solved. The Malian government can be said to be reluctant to act on such vices. Tourists might stop traveling to such places in the near future. It's also a security threat and a menace in general. Keep those comments flowing on our Facebook page and we'll always read them whenever we can. Back to you, Jane.
In the meantime, yes, we come back here in Germany and in the city Bonn, where we are broadcasting from. And here, DW's annual Global Media Forum commenced this morning. The International Congress provides a platform for experts from all walks of life to deliberate on interdisciplinary approaches to global challenges and the role of the media in investigating and communicating solutions. Now, reflecting on the 10th of the Global Media Forum, DW's Managing Director Peter Lemborg said the world was moving from calm times to turbulent moments, but he asked journalists not to lose their cause. Take a listen.
As the number of conflicts and crises increase, so does the importance of international broadcasters. This entails a growing responsibility for comprehensive, objective reporting. International broadcasters should never take sides, with only one exception when it comes to human rights. Ladies and gentlemen, media also has to promote the exchange of ideas and build bridges, even between seemingly unbridgeable positions. Those who stop the dialogue are basically capitulating. Journalists have to maintain the dialogue even when the issues are neither easy or match their own worldview. And I'm deeply convinced that we need fewer sad stories about what doesn't work and more motivating stories about what does work, about people everywhere in the world who are moving some thing along and bringing about positive change, especially in Africa.
DW's Director General Peter Lemborg speaking at the opening ceremony. Now, this year's theme is identity and diversity. I caught up with some of the participants, Stephen Ouma from Uganda and Percy Mabalama from the Democratic Republic of Congo, and I asked them what identity and diversity means to them as Africans. Take a listen.
When you talk about identity, you are looking at what gives us a unique tag, what you'd call in the corporate world a trademark. What values do we stand for as an identity? We are looking at sense of belonging. What makes me a mouthpiece of society? So we are looking at what I stand for, what I aspire to achieve, what are my objectives, what should I do to make sure that there is freedom of expression, there is press freedom, there is a democracy and human rights. Two, diversity. Diversity is having divergent views, change, different thinking, different ways of looking at things, but we're also aspiring to achieve exactly the same goals.
We have like 300 ethnics, and that is a little bit difficult because there is some people who are like a majority in those communities, but others are minorities. And in many times, the minorities are marginalized, and that makes the conflict to become really a big problem because everyone are looking for their identity.
Some of GMF participants talking about identity and diversity in Africa. Now, France is putting the elusive son of Equatorial Guinea's President Ouédraogo Obiang on trial for embezzlement and misappropriation of public funds and investing them in France. Now, Obiang Muge, who was named second vice president by his father, said he has immunity from prosecution and did not appear before the Paris court when his trial opened today. Zipporah Nyambura with the details.
Obiang is charged with laundering a huge amount of dirty money in France to feed a lavish lifestyle of luxury and sport cars, designer clothes, artworks of great value, and high-end real estate. He has denied the charges, which, if found guilty, could see him face up to 10 years in jail. His lawyer, Emmanuel Marcini, said they have requested the case be postponed and delayed because the International Court of Justice has been seized and there's a legal dispute between the Republic of Equatorial Guinea and France.
Monsieur Nguema n'a jamais contesté avoir gagné d'argent, beaucoup d'argent.
Mr. Nguema has never denied making money, a lot of money, but he did it in a lawful and legal way. This is not about the importance of the sums. He never said he made this money by being a minister. He has always explained that in his country it is possible to simultaneously have ministerial duties and be a shareholder of a company, which in some cases have contracts with the state, logging contracts, construction contracts for various infrastructures, works were done. I would like to say that for years these banking transactions went through the Bank of France, through most big French banks, and there was never any denunciation.
The lawyer representing Transparency International, William Bodo, says, nevertheless, justice will continue, and this is just the first chapter in the series of ill-gotten gains court cases.
Zipporah Nyambura reporting. You're listening to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe from the social media desk.
Still to come, do not express your dissatisfaction if you are on the side of Cameroon's government or you'll be arrested.
The actions taken by the disgruntled soldiers is justifiable because they had first informed the government through correspondence, but they did not reply. Even though the government thinks that they were wrong, protests were the only way to make their voices heard.
Well, you've been writing so much about these particular stories of the soldiers arrested, but of course I will have time to read some of your comments here. Just stay tuned.
And I will take on from there to say, at least 30 Cameroonian soldiers of the multinational joint task force fighting the Boko Haram insurgency have been arrested for organizing a string of protests against poor pay and difficult working conditions. They are due to face trial in a military tribunal. A military spokesperson says the protest masterminds who are still hiding are also being investigated. Moki Kinseka reports from Yaounde.
Pierre Ntsimi cleans the Yaounde residence of his 23-year-old brother Victor Ntsimi. Victor is among the soldiers who have been arrested for going on strike, demanding his dues be paid. And Pierre is quick to defend his brother.
The actions taken by the disgruntled soldiers is justifiable because they had first informed the government through correspondence, but they did not reply. Even though the government thinks that they were wrong, protests were the only way to make their voices heard.
But Colonel Didier Bajek, the spokesperson of Cameroon's military, has defended their move. He has asked that Victor be immediately replaced for his actions.
Une trentaine de soldats manifestent leur mécontentement.
It was unacceptable for the 30 soldiers called upon to defend the country to manifest their anger by blocking roads while their colleagues were on the border fighting the terrorists. The Minister of Defense gave instructions that the protesters should be arrested so that this one more bad memory should be forgotten. I do not understand what went wrong in the minds of the soldiers to abandon their commitment and oath they took to defend the Cameroon nation with honor and loyalty, even to the ultimate sacrifice.
Bajek says they have recovered all the weapons and the soldiers transported to the defense headquarters in Yaounde as investigations go on. He says they aim to find the strike masterminds since it has affected the troops' morale.
It is not such an isolated act that will give a bad image to a military that every day sacrifices to protect the country.
The soldiers were expected to be given additional sums of $500 per soldier each month as their peers in the UN peacekeeping mission in troubled CAR. Colonel Akutu Mvondo, Cameroon's Director of Military Justice, says the force led by Nigeria, with troops from Cameroon, Chad, Niger and Benin, agreed that each country should take care of salaries of its soldiers sent to fight Boko Haram.
Military hierarchy took time to explain to all soldiers of the multinational joint task force of the Lake Chad Basin Commission fighting the Boko Haram insurgency that their allowances and bonuses were to be paid from contributions of member states, and that while waiting for the contributions, each country would pay its soldiers taking part in the war according to agreements made with its soldiers. The money to be paid to the soldiers had no correlation with that paid to troops in UN peacekeeping missions, like the one in the Central African Republic.
The 8,700-strong multinational joint task force was announced in March 2015 in a bid to boost regional cooperation in fighting the Nigerian militants group. Donors, including Nigeria and the European Union, pledged $250 million to fight the insurgents, but fell short of its original $7,000 million budget.
Moki Kinseka in Yaounde. Now, Isaac, you said this too has been attracting lots of comments on our social media page. May you have the mic to share some of them with us?
Definitely, definitely, Jane. And to begin with, one that just came in right now from Wesley Trisa says, these soldiers are sacrificing their lives out there for the country and can't be paid, and the government is forced to arrest them because they complained. There is a lot of anger in that comment there. And Henry Ndum wrote on a Facebook page earlier and said, sadly enough, repression is the only language Cameroon knows how to speak better when citizens raise genuine concerns that sometimes need just a pat on the back to be solved. What a government in the 21st century.
And Zico Gift says, Paul Bier is using taxpayers' money to go and live in an expensive hotel in Switzerland, and the military personnel who are fighting Boko Haram are not paid for more than a year.
Stanley from Nigeria says, no right whatsoever to do such a thing of arresting them. I think it boils down the level of protest, whether peaceful or violent. Either ways, it is their right. It speaks volumes about the kind of regimes we have in Africa.
Too many comments indeed. Another one, Ichakara Abba, has only one question. Will a hungry soldier fight war, or will a depressed soldier fight war? The answer is no.
And Aliyu Muhammad from northeastern Nigeria wrote and said, people who risked their lives, left their families and loved ones, and embarked on the tasks of eradicating terrorism are getting arrested. They deserve enough salaries and allowances. It is illogical to arrest them. What a shame, Africa. That is totally inhumane and inconsiderate.
Too many of those comments there, Isaac. We shall get back a little later, but for now, health talk.
Health check.
Now, in South Africa, cancer survivors are disappointed with the behavior of some pharmaceutical companies accused of unfair pricing of cancer medication. So far, three companies, including Roche Holding SC, Pfeffer and Aspen Pharmacare Holdings Limited, are under investigation by the country's Competition Commission for charging exorbitant prices on life-saving cancer medication. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Cancer patients and organizations are hitting out at the companies who are accused of overpricing the cancer treatments to gain profits. For many, like Rebecca Musi, a 62-year-old breast cancer survivor from Soweto, the exorbitant pricing has come with a heavy price.
It's a sad state of affairs. It makes you helpless. People die prematurely because they are denied treatment. Because of these scrupulous companies charging so much.
Musi was lucky to get medical aid, but she says cancer treatments have often drained families of all their savings.
In addition to going through your surgery, your chemotherapy, your radiation, you have to have another medication which is called Herceptin. And at the moment, an injection, it's almost like 40,000 rand.
Professor Michael Herbst, a health specialist at the Cancer Association of South Africa, has welcomed the investigations because most of his patients have been lamenting about the high medical bills.
I get people coming to my office and say, Professor Herbst, please, we've already sold the second family car because we needed the money to save the life of somebody we love. We've got a second bond on the house already. We're now considering a third bond. What can we do?
Herbst wants the commission to expedite its investigations and ensure cancer medications are affordable to stop unwarranted deaths. And he has just one appeal to make to the pharmaceutical companies.
Where's Ubuntu? Where's humanity? Where's human rights? Where's caring for people? I mean, it's more than a double blow. It is so unfair, it's inhuman to do that to a cancer patient.
Swiss-based biotechnology company Roche owns exclusive marketing rights for the sale of trastuzumab, an essential breast and stomach cancer medication. Roche then sells it under the name Herceptin and Heglon. It also offers a 12-month course of Herceptin for over 34,000 euro. US-based company Pfizer is being investigated for excessive pricing of lung cancer medication, which it sells for 10,000 euro for only 250 milligrams. The third company, South Africa-based Aspen, is accused of abusing its dominance in the market by overpricing medication for cancers such as leukemia, ovarian cancer, and lymphomas. The prices of these drugs have allegedly gone up by 50% in the past 4 years. South Africa's Competition Commission's Deputy Commissioner, Hadin Rachisusu, says they hope to speed up investigations to stop any further suffering.
We obviously have prioritized this investigation. We are looking at a period of a year to wrap this up. If it goes beyond that, not more than 2 years. We hope that in the end, if there is a finding, there could be remedies to open up the market. Of course, where we establish excessive pricing, we'll have to intervene.
And that report was filed by Tuso Kumalo in Johannesburg. Now, for sports, the Confederation Cup is ongoing, and with it, there is a lot to explore, for example, the use of video referees. Now, DW Sports editor Chuck Penfold has been giving me an update on what's happening with the Confederation Cup. Take a listen.
On Sunday, the video referee, this new system that they're trying out, really came into focus. It was used four times. Two goals were called back. Two goals were given. The real controversy over this happened after Portugal's second goal in the 2-2 tie against Mexico, when it took more than 2 minutes for the video referee or for the whole process to be got through with the video referee giving the goal. So I think this video referee system, I don't think you can get away from it. I think people are, you know, I think it's going to have to be used in all football just because of the fact that, and a reminder, it's only for clear errors in match-changing situations. That's the only time it's supposed to be used.
We can get away from it. Just throw a little bit more light on how exactly does this video referencing work?
Sure. Well, basically, it's a... these guys are sitting not too far away, but they're sitting in basically a studio with TV monitors with cameras from different angles, and they can look at replays of plays that are controversial. So what happens is when the referee's in doubt, or they can actually communicate with the referee and say, we've got to take a look at this, then they do take a look at it, and they decide whether the call on the field has to be overturned or should be overturned, or whether it stands. And basically the attitude they're taking towards it is they have to have strong evidence that it's wrong. If it's still a gray area after they've looked at it, the call on the field stands. The problem is it's a bit confusing for the fans, because the fans in the stadium apparently don't see what's happening. They just know what's going on and just hear the decision in the end.
Okay, let's come back to Germany. That's playing its first game today. Now, what can we expect considering Löw's choice of young players?
Yeah, Löw has nominated a very young team. He's taking this opportunity to give some of the more veteran players in Germany a break, because they played the Euro last summer. They do need a break. And also, on the other hand, look at some young players that might be able to play themselves into the framework for next year. He has said that his focus is definitely on next year's World Cup. If they're able to win this Confederations Cup, they're happy to do so. But the real focus is on 1 year's time. He expects quite a difficult physical game against Australia tonight.
Talking about young players, we have the under-21 in Poland, and German just started their campaign yesterday. What is up there?
Yeah, well, Germany got off to the kind of start they were looking for. They had a 2-0 win over the Czech Republic with Schalke's Max Meyer scoring just before the break, and Serge Gnabry, who, of course, has an Ivorian father, just after the break in the 50th minute. And Gnabry, of course, has just moved to Bayern for 10 million euros for next season.
Gnabry just moved to Bayern for so much money. And there is also ongoing rumour that Cristiano Ronaldo is also on the move, and probably all eyes are on Bayern Munich. What do we know about this?
Well, they have been in Germany for the past few hours, I guess. Cristiano Ronaldo, of course, wants to leave Real Madrid because he's sort of insulted that a tax evasion investigation has been opened up against him. It looked like he would be going to Bayern because of his ties to Carlo Ancelotti, the Bayern coach, mm-hmm. who also coached Real Madrid for 2 years, 2013 to 2015. But Bayern's chairman, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, today came out and outright denied this rumor, saying it was basically a fairy tale.
DW Sports Editor Chuck Penfold. Now, Isaac, a quick revisit of Cameroon. As you say, there were quite lots of comments. And I'm seeing here Bashir Bode from Nigeria says, Cameroonian government need to review and reconsider its decision. Paul Biya is known for his dictatorial attitude.
Gabriel Boche says, so they should negotiate with the soldiers, allow them to understand the difficulty of the country is going through. Well, that's it from the Social Media Desk with me, Isaac Mugabe.
And from me, Jen Ayeko-Kumet, thank you for listening.